This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 88, Feeling Great. It's a different sort of episode today. It wasn't supposed to be, but it is. In fact, I think this is the first one that we've ever done like this. It's a solo podcast episode. It's just me here this week. Tom is still away, and we had lined up one of our semi-regular guest hosts. But unfortunately, work got in the way. Paid work got in the way. So it's just me. That means I have had a look through some of our listener questions that I was holding off for when Tom was back. And I went, you know what? I'm going to have to use them. So we're going to go through some of them. If you also have some quiz ideas, if you've got a quiz, please send all questions, quizzes, comments, whatever, into the watcherspodcast@gmail.com. We go through them and we may not have them on the week that you send them in, but we will definitely use them. We get through all of them, we promise. Particularly if they're questions. Lots of news coming up for you this episode as well. There's been a lot going on, particularly because Comic-Con happened and Tom will be back next week and we'll be finding out a little bit more about that because he was there. But I've been trawling through the news sites and I've got some of the goss. I'm not going to tread too heavily into the Marvel world just because he's like the expert on it and I'm not. I'm someone who loves the Marvel movies, but you know what Tom's like. He knows his stuff when it comes to the Marvel universe. But I'll give you some of the info about that. Some things that I've been watching, particularly Fear the Walking Dead, because we've just had their mid-season finale this week. And it won't be too spoilery. I just sort of want to comment on how different Fear and The Walking Dead feel compared to each other. Now more than ever, actually, I would have to say. So that's coming up a little bit later on, as well as, like I said, the listener questions. First off, though, I saw this story because everybody's been posting these pictures on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever. It's those FaceApp, that aging filter. Everybody's been doing it. I mean, not just people I know, but celebrities as well. And there was a bit of talk about some reservations and issues and problems that people thought potentially could arise from people using this app. It's a Russian-based company, and its terms of service, apparently, you know, the thing that you never read, you just hit accept so you can quickly start taking photographs and using the app. It grants FaceApp a perpetual, non-exclusive, royalty-free, worldwide, fully paid, transferable, sub-licensable license to use, reproduce, create works from and display your user content and any name, username or likeness provided in connection with your user content in all media formats, channels now known or later developed without compensation to you. Now, I would imagine this is kind of a shock if people were reading this for the first time, but I also suspect that a lot of apps and other bits of digital media that we use say similar things, and it's just that we don't read those terms and services. We just click accept that we have no idea what we're actually giving away and how much of it is giving away. You may also be contributing to face recognition databases. There was a guy, a lead cybersecurity researcher at Cyberint Technologies called Jason Hill, and he spoke with the newspaper in the US, USA Today. He said there's no immediate evidence to suggest that FaceApp is performing any nefarious task. But it could be compiling info, for example, collating photos associated with the user could, where present, allow image metadata, such as the location that the picture was taken. That would be able to be mapped and correlated with access logs gathered when the user accesses the service. That will associate details of their IP address, ISP, and the device, including the browser, operating system, and hardware. So if FaceApp wanted to get a whole heap of info out of you just by the photograph that you're submitting, they potentially could. Are they, though? Do they really care about that stuff? Other privacy experts are not as concerned. There was an article about it in Forbes, and they said a security researcher who goes by the pseudonym of Elliot Alderson downloaded the app and checked out where it was sending users' faces. Now, they found that FaceApp only took submitted photos. Those were the ones that you actually put in, and they went straight to the company's server. There are a couple of different servers. Actually, there's several different servers around the world. Places like America, Australia, Ireland, Singapore, so you can sort of see that they're located in regions. And Forbes contacted the FaceApp founder, and they said, "We only upload a photograph selected by the user for editing. We never transfer any other images from the phone to our cloud," which is the servers. Went on to say, "We might store an uploaded photo in the cloud. The main reason for that is performance and traffic. We want to make sure that the user doesn't upload the photo repeatedly for every edited operation. Most images are deleted from our servers within 48 hours from the upload date." He said that users can also request that all their user data be deleted, and that users can do this by going into the settings, then support and opt to report a bug using the word privacy in the subject line. So you got to send them a message. He also added, "We don't sell or share any user data with any third party." So I guess the message here is, doesn't look like, or at least they're saying that there's not too much danger in using this app, even though they potentially can use your images that you have been taking and popping in the FaceApp aged filter. It doesn't look like they are, but I think the lesson is we have to really read the terms and services before we hit the agree button with everything like this, because once it's out there, it's out there. User beware. That's what I'm talking about. User beware.
And now, a word from our sponsor. The world can be a lonely place when you're the last person on Earth. When the killer virus comes and wipes everyone off the face of the Earth but you, you have to be prepared. You need someone to talk to during those long, cold, electricity-free nights. Not Wilson is a solar-powered voice-activated digital friend. Simply charge during the day and chat away all night long.
"What you thinking about? Isn't it great you don't have to pretend to care about the state of origin anymore? You are literally the best looking human. I'ma let you finish, but I still think Single Ladies is a better song. If you were stuck on a deserted island, what one item would you take with you? Extra points for the correct answer. The answer is me."
Comes in human or ball shape. Use the code THEWATCHERS to get some sort of discount when you purchase your very own Not Wilson.
All right, let's get back into the news. This is controversial. Word on the street is that Cole Sprouse and Lily Reinhart, a.k.a. Jughead and Betty from Riverdale, have split. They've been going out for a couple of years, and spies say they overheard him telling a friend about the breakup at a party at Comic-Con. Now, they were both at the event together to promote, obviously, the show, but didn't spend too much time together. They had to sit, though, next to each other on their panel, and I wonder how awkward that was. I also wonder how long they have been broken up for, you know? Like, it could have been a while. I guess that's a problem with dating someone you're working with. At one point, there is a chance that you will break up, but you'll still have to work together. It always seems to happen on shows and movies, though, doesn't it? I guess it's in their contract to be professional. Also, they're contracted there. They cannot leave. Oh, people, speaking of leaving, it looks like Runway Project may be coming to an end, wrapping up soon. Now, since Heidi Klum, 16 designers, I used to love how she used to say that, and Tim Gunn left, the show's not really been the same. Now, the current host, Carly Kloss, had a two-year deal. That's going to finish up next season, and it looks like that is going to be the last for the program. The show's ratings have dropped since Heidi and Tim left, as you can imagine. Also, for the first time in its 15-year history, Project Runway was not nominated for an Emmy. Meanwhile, can we just 15 years? Is America's Next Top Model still going? Because I feel like that show started way before Project Runway. And if it's still going, that has to be one of the longest running reality competition programs out there, surely. If you know, let me know. TheWatchersPodcast@gmail.com.
Grab some turpentine, acetone, and benzene. That's all you'll need to make dip and survive the upcoming cartoon apocalypse. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I'm going to quickly get back into Riverdale now. Now, before he died, Luke Perry was apparently discussing bringing Shannon Doherty onto the show. And she's going to make an appearance in the show's tribute to Mr. Luke Perry. The episode is called In Memoriam and will reflect on his legacy and imprint of his character, Fred Andrews, the imprint and legacy that that character has had on the show. The showrunner said they wanted to make it as special as possible, so they asked Shannon to do a pivotal, super emotional role. She read the script and immediately said yes. And the showrunner said, it's very impactful. I don't actually know too much about the character. In fact, those couple of sentences from the showrunner is all that I sort of could find online about it. She, of course, is going to be back on Beverly Hills 90210 in the reboot. There was talk of Luke Perry being involved in that, but at the time of his death, he was not 100% locked in, simply because he was on Riverdale and I'm sure there were commitments and timing issues. But I mean, you can't have Beverly Hills 90210 without some sort of Dylan McKay, aka Luke Perry, appearance or two. So it'd be interesting to see who Shannon is in relation to his character in Riverdale. I guess we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see. The season 4 premiere will air on the 9th of October. So still got a little while to go, but not too far. Ah, now this one was from Deadline. I thought this was an interesting story. Ridley Scott is going to direct a movie called The Last Duel. It's a revenge-based story, and it's based on a novel by Eric Yeager. This is the interesting bit, though. Matt Damon and Ben Affleck will not only star in the movie, but they're also writing the script with Nicole Holofcener, who's done heaps of writing and directing. I'm talking movies and also TV shows, including Parks and Recreation and Sex and the City. Now, this is actually the first time Matt and Ben have worked on a script together since Good Will Hunting back in, it feels like so long ago, the 1400s, something like that. This is a revenge story of two best friends. You can imagine who those two will be, Matt and Ben. The main characters used to be friends. One goes to war and returns and accuses the other of raping his wife. No one will believe the woman, and the soldier appeals to the King of France to undo the decision handed down by the court. Now, the decision handed down is that the two men have to fight a duel to the death. The one left alive would be declared the winner as a sign of God's will. Now, the guy whose wife was allegedly raped, if he loses, his wife will be burnt at the stake for punishment for her false accusation. So it sounds like a pretty heavy movie. But with people like Ridley Scott, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck behind the helm, I think it's going to be interesting, particularly seeing they're writing that script for the first time ever together since Good Will Hunting.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
Aussie's done good. We do like a bit of that, don't we? Michaela Kavanagh. Now, she's been cast as a series regular on Amazon Studios' The Lord of the Rings TV series. She, if you watched the 2018 series Romper Stomper, you would know her from that. I don't, but I'm probably going to know her because she's going to be, like I said, in Amazon Studios' Lord of the Rings TV series. The show's going to be set in Middle Earth and will explore new storylines preceding the Fellowship of the Ring. So I guess that's sort of between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. There's no word on her character at the moment and how big a role she's going to play. But we do know that the series has a whole heap of fantastic writers, including some who worked on Breaking Bad and also Game of Thrones. So I'm really keen to see what this show is like because, as we know, the books are legendary at this point in time. The movies, the Lord of the Rings trilogy is... people still watch it. People still talk about it. And yeah, people enjoyed The Hobbit as well. But my main problem with The Hobbit was it's one book and it was broken up into, was it three? I can't remember. Two or three movies. And I just felt that that's sort of stretching the friendship a bit, you know, between movie maker and audience. But a TV series based on stuff that is outside of the stories that we know, I think that's really interesting. And yet another reason for me to teeter towards getting Amazon Prime. I have been looking at it. They've got quite a lot of stuff on there already that interests me, and to have this Lord of the Rings TV show go on there, I'm sort of tipping the scale a bit. You know how Hollywood likes to make stuff that they've already made before, or, you know, revisit stories that they have already done. I vaguely remember talking about this. Now, firstly, Coming to America 2 is a thing. They're Coming to America 2 again. Secondly, they've announced that Arsenio Hall, who was Semi, he'll be playing Semi again. Eddie Murphy is back. So that duo is there. If one of those two were not going to appear in Coming to America 2, I just don't think it would work. In fact, I'm not even sure that they would bother making it. The original movie was from, oh man, I want to say about 88. It feels like it's a 1988 kind of movie. The sequel is about Eddie Murphy learning about a son that will be the new heir to his throne. Where's the son from? Not sure. Only time will tell. Production of this movie is set to start soon, so I guess they'll dribble out some more news about the storyline as they make it. Now, I'm pretty sure Tom was talking about this recently, but Marvel Studios' first animated series in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, What If, is coming to the Disney Plus streaming service in America's summer 2021, so around that June to August phase. Looks like there's going to be a lot of famous actors from across the MCU who will reprise their roles as voice talent in What If. I did see over this week that Jeffrey Wright from Westworld will voice the Watcher. Now, if you recall Tom talking about this character, he's part of a celestial race that watch all things that happen in the universe. Now, they were briefly seen as part of a Stan Lee cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Now, the Watcher assigned to observe Earth and its solar system is named Uatu, I think. U-A-T-U, Uatu. And he serves as the narrator of Marvel's What If comic book series, telling readers tales of alternate realities, you know, that what if scenario. What if questions like, what if Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four? What if Jane Foster had found the hammer of Thor? And what if Hulk had the brain of Bruce Banner, which, you know, we've sort of seen in Endgame a little bit. What if is one of multiple announced Marvel Cinematic Universe series coming to Disney Plus. There's going to be The Falcon and The Winter Soldier, WandaVision, Hawkeye and Loki, like there's heaps of stuff. And like I said, Tom is our Marvel Universe expert. So when he comes back from Comic-Con, which he went to, we'll hear all about it and a whole heap more info. But I can tell you that Disney Plus will launch in November in the US. So hopefully we'll start getting it worldwide as well, not long after that. Also, now I did put emphasis on all of the syllables when I said, what if Jane Foster had found the Hammer of Thor? Well, we did see Natalie Portman was at Comic-Con and she will be Thor, female Thor. She posted a photograph of herself holding the hammer with the caption, which I quite liked, on her Instagram page. She said, so thrilled to share the news with you that I'll be returning to the Marvel MCU as female Thor with legends. And she, you know, talked about Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson, and she said in brackets, remember that this is the before picture for when I get jacked. So she's, you know, she's very petite and always has been. So I'm wondering how jacked she's actually going to get. I'm intrigued. And I'm sure we'll see all of that in the next year or two.
Showing, shibby, and somebody stop me. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I think that's enough newsy stuff. Let's get into some of the stuff that I have been watching over the past week. There's just so much television on at the moment that I have to watch, and I feel overwhelmed at times, but I have really enjoyed sitting down each week and watching one episode of something like Handmaid's Tale. It comes out weekly and you get to enjoy it, and I mean, I've said this before, Handmaid's is definitely a show that you can't binge watch, or at least I can't. Like, it's too full on, there's too much going on, and it's really heavy watching. But being able to watch an hour of it every week is palatable, and it makes you think, it makes you wonder what's going on storyline-wise. You start coming up with theories, and it's just so much different to finishing the episode and then going, all right, let's watch another one. Straight away, let's watch another one without pondering and enjoying discussing with other people exactly what's going to happen. Handmaid's Season 3 does not have that long to go either, so it's really wrapping up and ramping up as well. So I need stuff that will help me sort of calm down between those sort of heavier shows. So I've been getting into White Gold, which is from the UK. Think In Between Us, because, you know, there are people in it from In Between Us. And I remember watching In Between Us. I think I even watched a movie. It's a long time ago. And the sense of humour and comedy is really similar, but a little less, you know, teenage boy bodily function stuff going on there. I really enjoy it. And it's on Netflix. There are two seasons on there. And I just like the 80s thing. Maybe it's because I was on an 80s high from watching Stranger Things 3. The past couple of weeks, and I was sort of keen to jump into something else that was set in the 80s, referencing a whole heap of 80s stuff, and this is. It's set in a double glazing company, and they've got, you know, their salesmen who go out and about going door to door in the 1980s trying to sell people conservatories that are a bit shonky, and they're just horrible people, but in a comedic way. It's very funny, and if you haven't watched it, definitely do it. Like I said, it's a lot lighter to the other stuff that I've been watching recently. So it's a nice, as Tom would say, palate cleanser. Oh, speaking of palate cleansers, I've only just gotten into this. I mean, I know it's been around for a few years, but it's one of those things that's been on my radar and like on my list of things to watch, but I just haven't gone around to it. But I've been watching it on SBS On Demand, Last Man on Earth. Very funny. And you know I'm bang up for a bit of post-apocalyptic storyline genre. So this one is The Last Man on Earth. He's in America. He's because everybody else is gone, he can literally just take over everywhere and do whatever the hell he wants. And he's an enormous grot, particularly in the first couple of episodes. And it's just really funny. And if you haven't watched it, all the seasons are up there now on SBS On Demand. It's definitely worthwhile checking out. I might save some of the others for when Tom gets back, because I kind of want to discuss them with him a little bit, but I do think it's important to have a chat about Fear the Walking Dead. Mid-season finale happened this week. They had to get that plane. That plane. They had to. I'm still confused, and I'd completely forgotten why there was a deadline of why they had to get back, but there was this constant push for, everybody's got to get to the plane right now. And in The Walking Dead a lot, and Fear the Walking Dead as well, they get together, then they separate again, and then they've got to get back together as a group. And that's how the storylines tend to go. And I guess that was the push for them all getting back together again. They've got to get back together again to catch the plane. Managed to get it to work, which was fantastic. And they have some new younger group members. Alicia managed to convince those kids to come with them, which everybody was super happy about. We've got Dwight, and we've got Radioactive Lady, whose name I've temporarily forgotten. So many characters on so many different shows, it's hard to keep up with them. But what I like about Fear the Walking Dead, particularly this season, and I've mentioned this before, is how different it feels to The Walking Dead and how they're doing crazy things. And I know I've read, you know, online and Twitter and whatnot, some fans are checking out because they're like, nope, it's gotten too ridiculous. But you've got The Walking Dead there for that bleak, hopeless kind of zombie genre where it feels like everything they do, every decision they make, every person they meet is terrible and there's no positive outcome. Where Fear the Walking Dead, they followed those sort of storyline beats a lot in the first few seasons. And now that it feels quite different and this group of people feel different, they're in it together, which I know, you know, you've got like Alexandria and the Hilltop and the Kingdom, they're all in it together to a certain extent. But this group is in it together to build society again, to build a civilization based on helping each other. And I think they get that point across a lot better in Fear the Walking Dead at the moment. Another thing that I like about it is that all the characters are quite likable at the moment. You know, you meet a new character and you're wondering because you're so like, you're so accustomed now to having all the strangers have their own murderous intentions. So that when you meet someone in Fear the Walking Dead and you realize that they're not like that, it's wonderful. And I came into this mid-season finale thinking, all right, who's going to die? Someone's going to die. They're building it up. Who's going to die? And nobody did. And I'm not disappointed because I feel like this show feels different enough that it doesn't have to go with those shocks for finales. Now, whether we have some deaths later on in the second half of the season is highly possible. But because they have held it off, because they've held a death off for so long, when it happens, it's just going to hit us like a ton of bricks, and the characters as well. And I think that's going to be good for the show. I'm a Fear the Walking Dead fan, and I could talk about it for ages, but I think I'll leave it at that because we've got to get to the listener questions.
They said it couldn't be done, but I just watched them put a baby in the corner. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Like I said earlier, if you want to send us any questions, comments, or even quizzes, thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com is the place to send them all to. Patrick was lovely enough to send in a question. He said, what show do you most look forward to watching each week? Well, at the moment, probably Fear the Walking Dead and Handmaids. Probably Handmaids a little bit more just because I feel like the stakes are very high there at the moment as we're getting closer to the end of the season. And June is just making these decisions that seem very reckless and very dangerous. And I just don't know how she's going to get out of things. And will she? Will they end this season with her dying? Like, I was speaking with Mick about this last week. There are people online who are kind of trying to read it between the lines and try and guess where this story's going. And there are theories out there that we could lose June as the main character and then follow Serena's path. And I find that really interesting. And I'm scared too, because I'm scared that June's going to go. But we'll see. And at the moment, that is the show that I look forward to the most each week. Nicole said, Hey, watchers, are you guys more keen for the Game of Thrones prequel or The Witcher? She said, personally, I'm more interested in The Witcher as I've read all the books and I'm really excited to see how the world looks on my TV. Well, I haven't read the books of The Witcher and I've really only played one of the games, The Witcher 3. So I don't know the world as well as probably you do, Nicole, but I'm really keen for it. And I think maybe I'm more excited about The Witcher simply because we're starting to see more about it. It's obviously coming out before the Game of Thrones prequels will. And I'm kind of jumping on the hype train and I'm on board with Henry Cavill being Geralt of Rivia. I think his casting is really good. And if they can get a whole heap of monsters in there, yes, I'm going to watch. Tim said the Sonic movie trailer went down like a lead balloon and we know that they're going back to make Sonic look less weird. How do you think the second version of him will look? I don't know. I mean, I assume that they're going to have to make the fans happy. Do the fans want Sonic to look like he used to? You know, back in, like, I'm talking old school Sonic. Do they want that? And if so, how's that going to work with live human actors acting alongside him? It's going to be a bit difficult. I think they'll definitely try and make him look more cartoon-like, but they also, yeah, that's hard. Maybe they'll just fix his legs and arms. I'm not sure. Can't even remember what his face looked like in that trailer. Kind of wiped it out of my memory. Either way, they're spending a lot of money, so they have to get it right. Miguel said, hi, watchers. I have not missed one of your episodes. Oh, good on you, Miguel. I haven't either. He said, because of this, I'm confident I already know Tom's answer on this one, but I will ask anyway. Okay, well, unfortunately, Tom's not here, so you won't get an answer from him. But we will continue with your question, Miguel. He said, what sport do you wish you were better at? Well, obviously, I wish I was better at hockey. because then I'd be better at it and I play it all the time. But what would I like to be better at? When I was a kid, like sort of early teens, I wanted to be good at basketball, but I never played it outside of, you know, like school sport, which was every once in a while. But I'm short, so I was never going to be an amazing basketball player. But I did like it. I really liked it. I thought basketball was a lot of fun to play. So I would have liked to have been better at that. I remember one season, I decided to join with a group from work, indoor soccer team, an indoor soccer comp. And I thought, yeah, that'll be good. Like, I know the rules of soccer because most people do. And it's similar to hockey, except for one key, one fundamental key point. In hockey, you're not allowed to let the ball touch your foot. So you go out of your way to move your feet away from the ball. So my instinct whenever someone would pass the ball to me would be to not let it touch my foot. Now, in indoor soccer, you kind of need it to hit your foot. And then once I got around that problem, I realized that I also had no way of being able to tell my feet the direction with which I wanted the ball to be kicked. So I would kick it going, I'm going to pass to that person on my right, and would just sort of veer off to the left to a player from the opposition. And I was not good. So I realized my only way to help the team was to play very defensively and sort of block the opposition from getting anywhere near the goal, which I don't even really like playing defense in hockey. So it was not really my most desired position, but it was the only place I could think of that I could be of any use. I only played that one season and then I let it go. I did like playing indoor volleyball though. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, that was good fun. I'd like to be better at that as well. Maybe we should take it up again. I say that, but I'm totally not going to. Bella said, hi guys, I'm in my last year of high school and looking ahead at life after year 12. I know I want to go to uni, but I don't really know what career I want outside of that. I guess I'm expecting my time, studies and experiences at uni to help me find a career path. Did you know what you wanted to do when you were in high school? Not really. I knew what I didn't want to do. And that was what I deemed at the time to be boring work. So when people were doing economy or maths and that kind of thing, I didn't want anything to do with that because I considered those all quite boring. Having looked back on what people need in life to function as an adult, you probably need to know a bit more about economy and maths. But I've gotten by being very stingy. But no, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And even at uni, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I kind of just went through uni picking subjects that interest me. And then towards the end of it, I started doing like music and editing, a lot of editing, audio editing, I should say. And that interested me. But even then, once I finished uni, I was still not quite sure what I wanted to do. And then I had one of those light bulb moments where I went, oh, maybe I can do audio editing and people would need that in radio. And then when I tried radio, I realized that I actually preferred being an announcer more than an editor or producer or anything like that. Having said that, I've done all of it. I've been a panel op, producer, announcer, and now podcast. Well, I do all three here with The Watchers. So I would say, Bella, don't worry about not knowing what you want to do in high school. Anyway, you know what? The career or the jobs that you will end up doing over your life are probably not even jobs now. Like, what we need as a society in terms of, like, technological jobs and whatnot, they haven't even been thought of. Like, would anybody have known what an influencer was 10 years ago? And now look at people. They're making lots of money from being influencers. And I'm not saying you need to be an influencer, but I'm just saying that the jobs that you will end up doing don't exist at the moment. So just do what you're good at and do what interests you. And I think you'll end up being happy and in a job that you're suited to. All right, one more listener question and then I think we'll wrap this episode up because I'm sick of talking to myself. Joshua said, is it bad of me to say the main reason I listen to your podcast is because I love your accent? No, Joshua, not at all. He says, I'm from Arizona and I don't hear the Aussie accent at all where I live. What's your favourite accent? Oh, man, okay. Well, the times that I've travelled outside of Australia, I'd have to say that going to America is the only time that I've ever gotten attention from having an Australian accent. Now, back in the day when I was backpacking across the US, people would say Crocodile Dundee and Steve Irwin. And they're like, oh, you're like the crocodile hunter. You're like, yep, but no. People in the US would also ask what part of England I was from. And I guess because, you know, of Crocodile Dundee and Steve Irwin, like those really thick Aussie accents, I don't have because I'm not from those areas where they grew up or where those characters were supposed to have lived. But yeah, the Americans seem to be really fascinated with the Australian accent, which I think is really cool. I really like it and I do like the attention. And I am hoping that Tom will bring up a story that he encountered over in the US. He said a lot of people were very interested in him because of his accent when he was in the US, when he's there now. And yeah, I don't know, the accent that I would like, that I like the most, I do like the Welsh lilt. I like the sing-songing way the Welsh accent is. I like really thick, like Glaswegian accents, just because it's like a challenge to try and figure out what they're saying. I like the Canadian accent. I think that sounds quite nice. French accents, of course. Well, then just the French language in general is for me, probably the most beautiful language to listen to. And their accents while speaking English are pretty lovely as well. So, yeah, I hope that answered your question, Josh. Sure. I almost called you Josh. Sorry. I think that's going to do it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Tom will be back next week and we'll have all of the fun and all of the talking and we'll find all about his adventures in the US. And like I said, I've got some other stuff that I have watched this week, but I kind of want to discuss with him. So we'll be talking about that as well. I've just realized that I get to do the goodbye sign off. So Leah, thank you.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks a lot.